340, Section 2, The War of 1812 and Indian Removal. As you read, look for Georgia's role in the War of 1812, Discovery of gold in Georgia, the removal of the Creek and the Cherokee from Georgia, terms, impressment, syllabary, Trail of Tears. Textile mills became an important part of the New England economy after the United States had a second war with England and found itself needing the manufactured goods that England made, including cloth. This War of 1812 did not bypass Georgia, although most of the fighting was in other places. The war ended in a stalemate, but it had major effects on the country, ushering in a major period of change. In Georgia, the most serious effect was on the Native Americans. The war began the push to remove them from the state's borders. By 1840, the Creek and the Cherokee were gone. The War of 1812. By the time Thomas Jefferson became president in 1800, the French and the British were once again at odds with the other. In 1805, the two countries were at war. The United States did not want to be involved, but it was trading with both countries. Both Great Britain and France were trying to prevent the United States from trading with the other. So both the French and the British were stopping U.S. ships and sometimes seizing goods that they thought might be going to the enemy. The British were also taking American sailors from the ships, claiming that they were British citizens and putting them in the British Navy. This practice was called impressment. Between 1805 and 1812, several thousand were seized. The British were also still in Canada, and the Americans felt they were stirring up problems with the Indians in the Northwest Territory. There, a Shawnee chief named Tecumseh had begun to form a confederation of Indian groups against the United States. His brother, a religious leader known as the Prophet, also exerted strong influence on the Native Americans. They were concerned that the Americans wanted more and more territory. The Indians wanted to keep their lands and their traditional way of living. Tecumseh had come south to try to convince the Creek and the Cherokee to join his resistance. Some of the Creek did, but the Cherokee did not. The destruction of his headquarters led Tecumseh to ally with the British in the War of 1812. The trade conflicts with Great Britain, their taking of American sailors, and the belief that they were supporting the Indians led President James Madison to ask for a declaration of war in June 1812. The main opposition to war came from New England. The South and West favored it. The United States had many problems going into the war, including a small navy and small army. They had to rely on their citizens to volunteer as soldiers. The United States also did not make many goods, buying most of those from abroad, especially from Great Britain. The United States did not have a good system of transportation. Roads where they existed were often in disrepair. Rivers and streams had few bridges, so getting troops or cannons around was not easy. In spite of these difficulties, the United States went into war with the major superpower of the time, Great Britain. Although France did not become an ally of the United States, it was already fighting Great Britain. This was good for the United States because it meant the British had to pay more attention to the French army and navy than to the weak forces of the United States. Page 342, Georgia in the War. Georgia was concerned about the Creek Indians and the influence the British might have over the Indians. Georgia also worried about the influence of the Spanish in Florida, who allowed the British to continue to trade with the Creek, who came through the Florida colony. Many of the Upper Creek, known as the Red Sticks, had joined Tecumseh's resistance and were receiving guns from the British through the port at Pensacola, Florida. President Madison asked former Georgia Governor George Matthews to stir up a rebellion of former U.S. citizens who lived in East Florida. They were able to take one small town, but St. Augustine held out. After the failure, Madison refused to admit his involvement with Matthews. The angry Matthews was on his way to Washington, supposedly to horsewhip Madison when he died. Meanwhile, Georgia Governor David Mitchell called out militia to invade Florida. Congress, however, refused to approve his action. The Savannah militia did go to St. Augustine, but, as in the past, the fort was unconquerable. In 1813, Georgia worked to improve its defenses, including rebuilding the fort in Sunbury, which Georgia renamed Fort Defiance. But Georgia did not have ships, and the U.S. Navy did not have enough ships to spare, so the British were able to seize merchant ships trying to leave Georgia. In 1814, the British defeated the French and began sending more troops across the Atlantic. In May 1814, a British fleet raided islands and rivers near St. Mary's and the Florida border, but sailed away. A few months later, in January 1815, a fleet commanded by British Admiral Sir George Cochrane landed troops on Cumberland Island and at St. Mary's. Cochrane's plan was to take Savannah, as the British had been able to do in the American Revolution. Soon, however, news came that peace had been declared. When the treaty was ratified in February, the British left. The threat to Georgia and to Georgia's trade was over. The Red Stick or Creek War. One of the most frightening events to Georgians happened in the land they had given up in 1802, the Alabama Territory. Since the 1790s, a divide had been growing in the Creek Nation. Those Creek opposed to further land cessions and to the plan of civilization had supported Tecumseh's resistance. Many other Creek did not. In August 1813, the Red Stick Creek attacked and killed about 400 Americans at Fort Mims in Alabama Territory. This led to the conflict called the Red Stick War, part of the War of 1812 in this area. Alarmed Georgians built Fort Lawrence on the Flint River. The United States government assigned General John Floyd to command Georgia's troops. They gathered at Fort Hawkins, built at present-day Macon. In November 1813, these troops, with help from Friendly Creek and Cherokee, attacked a Red Stick town in Alabama Territory, forcing the Red Sticks to flee. In March 1814, troops led by General Andrew Jackson soundly defeated the Creek at the Battle of Horseshoe Bend in Alabama. Jackson forced the Creek to sign the Treaty of Fort Jackson, in which they gave up a large area in South Georgia all the way to the Florida border. The Indians would no longer be able to trade with the British or Spanish in Florida. The treaty, however, took land from not only the Red Sticks, but also from the Creek who had fought on Jackson's side. Indian agent Benjamin Hawkins and the Friendly Creek thought this was very unfair. Page 344, the final removal of the native peoples from Georgia. Those who lost the most in the War of 1812 were the Native Americans. This was true throughout the country. In the Northwest Territory, the defeat of Tecumseh and his followers led to further land cessions. None, however, lost more in the long term than the Creek of Georgia. In a little over a decade after the war ended, the Creek no longer had any homeland in Georgia. The Cherokees' path to removal was different. However, in the end, they too lost their Georgia lands. Creek removal. The most immediate loss of land for the Creek as a result of the war was the 1814 tract described in the Treaty of Fort Jackson. That was followed in 4 years by two smaller pieces in 1818. However, Georgians wanted all the Creek land, not small pieces, and that led to further negotiations. An important leader of the Lower Creek at this time was William McIntosh, Jr. His father was a Scots Indian trader, and his mother, Sonoya, was a member of the powerful Wind Clan. He grew up in the Creek Nation, but he also learned English and English customs. McIntosh had many American connections, including his first cousin, George Troop, who was governor of Georgia from 1823 to 1827. In the 1810s, McIntosh had tried to continue Alexander MacGillivray's ideas of creating a more central government for the Creek, rather than each town having so much power on its own. He helped create a national council and some national laws for the Creek. McIntosh was one of the leaders who supported Benjamin Hawkins and the plan of civilization. McIntosh had even led a group of Lower Creek fighting with Andrew Jackson against the Red Sticks at Horseshoe Bend. In 1821, McIntosh was one of the negotiators for the Creek in the First Treaty of Indian Springs. In that treaty, the Creek gave up their land between the Ocmulgee and Flint Rivers, but Georgians wanted more. In 1825, McIntosh was involved in the Second Treaty of Indian Springs, in which the Creek gave up the rest of their land, all the way to the Chattahoochee River, Georgia's border with Alabama. In return, the Creek received $200,000. Most Creek did not agree to the treaty, and McIntosh paid for his support of it with his life. He had broken one of the reform laws that he had favored. That law said that any Creek who signed an agreement to give away land without the approval of the whole Creek Nation would be executed. In 1825, an Upper Creek chief killed McIntosh at his Acorn Bluff plantation in what is now Carroll County. Because of the dispute about the treaty, the government declared it void and negotiated a new treaty called the Treaty of Washington in 1826. While the Creek retained some of their Alabama land in the new treaty, they gave up the Georgia land. This was the beginning of the final removal of the Creek people from Georgia. Page 345, Cherokee Removal and the Trail of Tears. The Cherokee were also targets of efforts to civilize the Native Americans. They had suffered greatly toward the end of the Revolution, when backcountry patriots had attacked and destroyed many of their towns. They struggled to maintain their way of life. They were ready, however, for better relations with their white neighbors and had agreed to the 1783 Treaty of Augusta. In other treaties, they also gave up land in states north of Georgia. As a result, many Cherokee migrated into the areas of North Georgia that they still controlled. In the 1790s and early 1800s, most began to accept the ideas of farming and cattle raising. Like the Creek, they could no longer make a living on the trade of deerskins. A good example of a Cherokee who made this change from hunter to farmer was the man who came to be known as Major Ridge. Man who walks on the top of the mountain was his Cherokee name, so the Americans called him the Ridge. His brave fighting at Horseshoe Bend with Andrew Jackson earned him the title Major, which he then used as his first name. Major Ridge had been born in Tennessee, but he and his wife, Susanna, moved to Georgia in the 1790s, where they became successful planters. Major Ridge joined with other Cherokee leaders in trying to centralize the Cherokee Nation. Foremost among these leaders was John Ross, whose heritage was Scots and Cherokee. He was well educated at an academy in Tennessee. In 1827, he had established a store and a ferry near Lookout Mountain in Tennessee. Ross's Landing, as it was called, would later be renamed Chattanooga. Ross became a successful businessman and planter. By the 1820s, the Cherokee were different from the other Native Americans in a major way. They could read and write in their own language, thanks to the work of a Cherokee named Sequoia. He had been born in Tennessee, but when the Cherokee had given up that land in the 1790s, he had moved to Arkansas. He had been impressed by the ability of whites to talk with each other over long distances through their symbols on paper. So in 1821, he developed a syllabary, a set of over 80 written symbols that represented the syllables of the Cherokee language. That made it possible for the Cherokee to write and to translate written English into Cherokee. The ability to write led to the establishment of a Cherokee newspaper, the Cherokee Phoenix, which printed the news in both English and Cherokee. Its founder was Elias Boudinot, a nephew of Major Ridge. Boudinot had been educated in a mission school in northern Georgia and later a boarding school in Connecticut. He raised the money to purchase a printing press and have the Cherokee symbols made for the press. The first edition of the newspaper came out in February 1828. In the 1820s, through the work of Ridge, Ross, and others, the Cherokee had established a representative government which included a national council. They founded the capital city of New Ekota in North Georgia, where, in 1827, they wrote a Cherokee constitution based in part on the U.S. Constitution. John Ross was elected principal chief, the main executive of the nation. He held that position until he died in 1866. At the same time, the Cherokee were adopting so many of the ideas that the federal government had encouraged them to accept. Georgia leaders became more determined to get the rest of the Cherokee land. In 1827, Georgia claimed that its laws extended into Cherokee territory. The situation became worse when gold was discovered near present-day Dahlonega in the hills of North Georgia. The first written news of the gold came in 1829, and fortune seekers soon poured into Cherokee territory. As one man later remembered it, they came afoot, on horseback, and in wagons, acting more like crazy men than anything else. At first, the gold could be found in the streams, so mining was done on the surface using pans. But soon, gold-hungry miners were digging into the rock to uncover the gold. Towns began to form around areas of gold. The Cherokee could do nothing to keep people off their land. In 1830, President Andrew Jackson supported and Congress passed the Indian Removal Act, which set aside land west of the Mississippi River as Indian Territory, present-day Oklahoma. The government wanted to give this land to the Native Americans in exchange for their lands east of the Mississippi River. Many Georgians wanted the Cherokee to go west. In 1831, the Cherokee Nation sued the state of Georgia for intruding on its land, but the Supreme Court ruled that the Cherokee Nation had no power to sue before the court. In 1832, missionaries living in Cherokee territory brought another lawsuit. They were U.S. citizens and had the power to sue. In the Worcester versus Georgia case, Chief Justice John Marshall of the U.S. Supreme Court said the land belonged to the Cherokee and their law, not Georgia law, was in force within their boundaries. The Cherokee had won in court. Unfortunately for the Cherokee, President Jackson refused to enforce the decision. He reportedly said, "John Marshall has rendered his decision. Now let him enforce it." Some Cherokee leaders began to argue that it was best to make a deal with the United States and move. The leader of this removal group was Major Ridge, supported by the writings of Elias Boudinot in the Phoenix. John Ross and the majority of Cherokee wanted to stay and try to hold on to their land. The Cherokee people became bitterly divided. In 1835, Ridge and a small group signed the Treaty of New Ekota, agreeing to move in return for land in the Indian Territory and $5 million. They began moving over the next couple of years. John Ross and the other Cherokee tried to fight removal, arguing that the treaty was not legal. Like the Creek, the Cherokee had a law that made giving up land without the agreement of the majority a crime punishable by death. Ross and the remaining Cherokee held out until the government sent army troops to Georgia. In 1838, General Winfield Scott and nearly 7,000 troops arrived in New Akota. The troops first built stockades to house the Cherokee. Then they took the Cherokee from their homes and community buildings and forcibly moved them into the stockades. Hundreds of men, women, and children died of cholera, dysentery, and fever while in the stockades. From the stockades, they were sent to centralized forts, most in Tennessee, to begin the final journey. In the summer of 1838, the Army loaded several thousand Cherokee onto crowded boats and sent them on the Tennessee, Mississippi, and Arkansas rivers to their new homes. The boats were dirty, and the food the government gave them was often not fit to eat. By the time these Cherokee arrived in Indian Territory, nearly one-third of the group had died. Some Georgia Cherokee ran into the mountains of North Carolina and hid out. They became the eastern band of the Cherokee Nation and still live on a reservation at Cherokee, North Carolina. In late fall, the rest began a 700 to 800-mile walk to Indian Territory. They endured bad roads, storms, blizzards, sickness, and sorrow. It took some people months to make the trip. Over 4,000 died along this trail of tears. One of those was John Ross's wife, Quatty. Once they reached Indian Territory, John Ross was re-elected principal chief, and he worked to re-establish his people in their new land. Major Ridge, his son John, and Elias Boudinot were killed for their participation in the Treaty of New Akota. For some time, bitterness between the two groups kept the Cherokee divided, but their new land required the work and cooperation of everyone, so they eventually healed their split. In the 5 decades after Georgia became the 4th state to ratify the United States Constitution, the state went through great expansion and growth. Much of this growth came at the expense of the Creek and the Cherokee, who gave up one after another piece of the lands of their ancestors. By the end of this time, they had been removed to land west of the Mississippi River. Their lands mainly went to Georgia farmers, who received the land up until 1803, mainly as headright grants or soldiers' grants, and after 1805, by lottery. On the land Georgians farmed, which crops they grew, depended on the place of their land and the number of workers in their households. Innovations such as the cotton gin and railroads also set the state on its road to prosperity. By the 1840s, Georgia was becoming the Empire State of the South. Reviewing the section. 1. Define. Impressment. Trail of Tears. 2. What was Sequoia's great contribution to the Cherokee? 3. Do you think that the Cherokee could have stayed on their land if gold had not been discovered near Dahlonega? Why or why not? Page 350, Discovering Georgia, the Chief Van House. About 3 miles outside Chatsworth is the Chief Van House. James Van was the son of a Scottish trader and a Cherokee mother. In 1804, he built an impressive 2-story brick home on the Federal Road. Van became very wealthy, operating a trading post, ferry, and tavern. He was also a plantation and slave owner. He was one of 3 principal chiefs of the Cherokee and was instrumental in the Cherokee adopting some of the culture of American society. He helped convince the Moravians to establish a school nearby where his son Joseph began his education. He was murdered in 1809, probably in retaliation for a killing he had committed. Although Cherokee culture required that his house and land pass on to his wife, he had written a will leaving the plantation to his son Joseph. The Cherokee Council honored the will. Joseph Van was a child when his father died, but he too became a talented entrepreneur, increasing the family wealth through the plantation, taverns, and even steamboats. He was even nicknamed Rich Joe. In 1819, President James Monroe was Joseph's guest at the house. Joseph became a member of the Cherokee Council, the Cherokee equivalent of the U.S. House of Representatives. In 1834, the Georgia Guard evicted Van from his home for unknowingly breaking a Georgia law. That law stated it was illegal for an Indian to hire a white person without permission from the state of Georgia. Van had hired a white overseer for his plantation. Forced from his home, Van took his family to a plantation he had in Tennessee before migrating to the Indian Territory of Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, he settled at Weber Falls on the Arkansas River and became a leader of the Western Cherokee. He died in 1844 in a steamboat explosion near Louisville, Kentucky. Today, the Chief Van House has been restored as a house museum where the story of the Vans and the Cherokee people and their removal is told. Page 352, Chapter Review. Chapter Summary, Section 1, Georgia's Land and Economic Growth. In the late 1700s and early 1800s, the Creeks signed a number of treaties by which they gave up all their land between the Ogeechee and Ocmulgee rivers. In the late 1700s, the U.S. government developed a policy to civilize the Indians by turning them into farmers. The Yazoo land fraud occurred when land companies bribed Georgia legislators to sell them Georgia's western land at low prices. The Yazoo Act was repealed in 1796. In 1802, Georgia ceded its western land to the national government. In 1803, Georgia began to grant land by land lotteries. Eli Whitney's invention of the cotton gin in 1793, patented in 1794, resulted in the rise of cotton as Georgia's primary cash crop and an increase in slavery to tend the increased acres of cotton. The use of steam power on steamboats and on railroads revolutionized how Georgia's farmers got their crops to market. Early railroads in the state were the Central of Georgia and the Georgia Railroad. By 1860, Georgia had one of the best rail systems in the South. Section 2, The War of 1812 and Indian Removal. In 1812, the United States declared war on Great Britain because of trade conflicts, impressment of American sailors, and British support for the Indians. Georgia's main involvement with the War of 1812 was in the Red Stick or Creek War. William McIntosh was the leader of the Creek Nation. He was involved in the two treaties of Indian Springs by which the Creek gave up all their land in Georgia. McIntosh paid for his participation with his life. The Cherokee had adopted many of the ideas and customs of whites, including developing a written language and a representative government. Gold was discovered near Dahlonega in 1829, and gold seekers poured onto Cherokee land looking for their fortune. In 1830, Congress passed the Indian Removal Act, which called for all Native Americans to be removed to land set aside for them west of the Mississippi River in present-day Oklahoma. Although John Ross and the Cherokee tried to resist removal through legal means, they were gathered up in the summer of 1838 and forced to move to Indian Territory. Their journey was called the Trail of Tears because so many died along the way. Page 353 contains a review of Chapter 14.